I'm on the job, you Big Nate Bob. It's Snescapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them. That's pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys.
And I am Emmy Zero, and we are back with Season 2, Episode 2 of Snescapades. We have three more games for you folks today, and I'm excited about them. I think these are pretty interesting games. So, yeah, of course they are. We're going to actually talk about them on the show, as is our want.
I think two of... they're all interesting.
They're all too interesting. I agree. I think two of them are actually really good games, too. So...
Yeah. And just a little bit of inside baseball here. I just kind of want to let everyone know. We've started a policy here in Season 2 that we are not going to discuss these games off mic. We kind of want to be a little bit surprised and also just not accidentally, like I used to do, definitely forget what I talked to you about. did I already say that on mic, or did I just mention that to you before we recorded? So yeah, no more of that. I legitimately didn't know, like, you know, where you fell on one of these games, though I had a pretty good idea of where, you know, because we tend to agree a lot anyway.
Pretty similar tastes in games. It is true. But it's not always one-to-one. So I'll be interested to hear what you have to say about especially about the game that I imagine you're referring to there. What do we have to talk about today, Chase Keys?
Well, today, Emmy Zero, we have Total Carnage, RoboCop versus Terminator, and Aladdin versus Terminator. Nope, sorry, got my notes mixed up. Disney's Aladdin. It's just Aladdin.
It's just Aladdin. You know, Al, Laddie. You know, maybe Prince Ali, if you're feeling fancy, but,
I usually am.
It's a good way to feel. So these are our games for today. And, I think we should just, you know, let her rip, get right into this.
I'm kind of thinking, let's get rid of all ambiguity here. I was thinking maybe we would do a game sandwich where the meat of the sandwich is going to be maybe the less great part, but those buns are going to be fantastic buns.
Yep. Let's get into that top bun or that bottom bun. I don't know which we're starting at the top or the bottom of this thing. I guess probably the bottom. You have to build the sandwich, yeah. Right?
Right. Yeah. So I was kind of thinking maybe we'd start with RoboCop v Terminator.
Ooh, interesting. All right. Let's start with RoboCop v Terminator.
RoboCop and Terminator have not had great track records on the Super Nintendo up to this point, I don't think. I know RoboCop was it very near the bottom of our list for a long time when we were ranking those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And we elected, we'll talk about this when we eventually do our wrap-up episode for this month, but we elected to skip over a Terminator game. That we could have played this month because we did not really think it was worth giving the full featured episode treatment to. So
policy now is only one Terminator game for a month. Sorry. But anyway, but this one is okay. So this one comes to us from developer Interplay and publisher Virgin Games. Mm-hmm. And this is a 2D side-scrolling walk-in shooter. Not really run and gun, more like walk and gun, because, you know, you're RoboCop, you're not super fast, but it doesn't really matter in this game. Like in the first RoboCop game, being slow was a real problem. In this one, it's kind of not.
It just makes you feel methodical and, you know, like you feel like RoboCop. I'll say that.
Yeah, definitely. You can take quite a few hits before going down. You've got a good range of movement on your shots. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take too many shots to take out most threats. You know, it feels pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, presentation-wise, I think this game is all right. It's not amazing, but it does the job.
Yeah.
I do like the level design. Like, I don't think the first level makes a great first impression. It's pretty bog standard. Like, hey, move to the right. There's a few things within these city alleys as you're walking around as RoboCop. You can climb up ladders. You can go up to like a second or third level of the platforms that are there, walking around, shooting people. Sometimes people are shooting out of windows. You know, it's fine. It's not amazing. But levels after that are a lot more dynamic. There's a lot more vertical and horizontal movement. But unlike a lot of games that try to do that, this one didn't leave me feeling lost. It was all very straightforward. You know, I never felt like my character wasn't equipped to take care of the challenges that were thrown at him. The levels read pretty well. Like, there's a level where you're climbing up a construction site, and I came across an area where there's some wooden planks that kind of give just a little bit under RoboCop's feet, and I was like, oh, I bet those are going to break away after a while, and I was right, so I didn't feel like it was an unfair surprise when that did end up happening to me at one point. Yeah, this is a pretty fun little game. What did you think of this one?
So, I like this one. It is actually interesting, because I said there were two really good games this week, and one that was somewhat less good. And you agreed with that, but I think we do not necessarily agree on which one of those.
Oh.
Other because I think this is the less good of the two non-Aladdin games today.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
I like this game. I agree with everything you said about it. But I do find that RoboCop is sometimes it's a little hard to tell exactly where the like edges of his sprite are, because he's quite big, and this is not as much of a problem in this game as it is in the games we talked about last week, where you have this like giant thing that is taking up like way too much of the screen. I don't think that here, and I really like the art in this game, so I think the big sprite is worth it. But it does get a little frustrating sometimes. Like, the first proper boss fight in this game is against an ED-209 at the end of kind of the second part of level one. It took me a little bit to get past that, because it was just hard for me to get a sense of how to dodge the enemy robot's shots. But I do think it's good, and I enjoyed the level design, like you said. And I think it does deserve mentioning what this game, like, I think this game actually gets kind of a big boost from its concept. And what this is an adaptation of the Dark Horse comic series, RoboCop versus the Terminator, which was released like the year before this game came out. And this game uses some of Walt Simonson's art from that comic. Walt Simonson was a really great, really successful, prolific comics artist in the 80s, especially. He did sort of like the definitive run of Marvel's Thor comics for a very long time. So this comic was drawn by him, and it was written by the both famous and infamous writer Frank Miller, who was sort of legendary for having redefined and sort of created what we kind of consider like the modern concepts of both Batman and Daredevil in the 80s. He had also has a lot of really bad stuff connected to him. He's one of those guys where 9/11 broke his brain and he became like this raving, like, Islamophobic monster. That super sucks, and it does really taint the work that he did. But I do think that he did some really like important and in some cases really good work as a comics artist and writer. And I haven't read this comic, but I kind of feel like it might actually be part of like the good run of Frank Miller stuff, because this thing is fascinating sounding. It's a mashup comic that essentially imagines the Terminator future as the future of the RoboCop universe, and features a like kind of battle between RoboCop, Alex Murphy, and Skynet that is waged across like decades and generations, and features like multiple overlapping timelines and just kind of the wild abandon to do anything with these character concepts that you really only ever see in like non-commercial fan works. It's a fascinating thing, and it really does give like a big charge to this game, I think, to have that be the source material for this. Because I think this is a bit Contra-ish. Like, RoboCop doesn't really move like a Contra hero, but there is a general sense of kind of, you know, being just like this, like, weapon of war that is sort of plowing through enemies that I think is kind of similar to a Contra game. I think this is a really successful one of those. So, yeah, I like this game a lot.
I will say, you know, going back to what you said about the first boss fight in this game, I do agree that's kind of part of like that whole thing about I feel like the first level being kind of underwhelming. I basically just had to tank that fight because I was not entirely certain what I was meant to do to actually, you know, effectively fight that stupid thing. But later on in the construction site, I got to a fight with a Terminator that I thought was a lot more fun because you kind of got this area with, you know, a limited amount of things to like climb up and, you know, places to go. You're not just on like a flat playing field, more or less, fighting this thing. And he chases you around that area. I did find it pretty easy to like get to a point where I could really exploit the AI of the game, but it was an interesting idea and I thought it was pretty well done. Like I wish that they had thought of a better concept for the first level, because I do think that it doesn't do this game many favors, but if you can get past that, I think there's a pretty decent game in here.
I agree. Yeah. And I think there's like nice, there's good stuff even in that first level that like there's, they do some good stuff with like the background layers and like guys in the background that will like fire like rockets at platforms and stuff to, you know, take them out in front of you. I think that like, yeah, I agree. That first level does not really show this game off to the best of its ability, but it's worth pushing through that.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting much from this game and it definitely ended up being something I really enjoyed my time with. I am pleasantly surprised. I don't know if I've got a whole lot else to say about it right now.
RoboCop versus the Terminator. If you're going to check out one game on this Super Nintendo that is about either RoboCop or the Terminator, let it be this one.
So, where should this go on the list? I was kind of thinking like this might be a B tier game, unless you don't think it's...
No, I do. I think this is a B tier game. I think this is, you know, it fits in right alongside things like B.O.B. certainly. Like I think this is actually a, you know, a better game than some of the stuff we've got on the B tier at this point. I'm very comfortable putting it there.
All right. Well, congratulations, RoboCop versus Terminator. You are now you're not our number or anything. You're in the B tier.
You're in the B tier. Yeah, good for you.
I was wondering if they had made a sequel to this, like, could they have done a thing where, like, you're playing as either the, you know, RoboCop or, like, one of the good Terminators.
Right, yeah.
Oh, you could have almost made, like, this, like, an arcade beat-em-up kind of thing.
That would be cool. That would be super cool.
Kind of like the Alien versus Predator Capcom arcade game that they made. Oh, Capcom. What? Capcom, you needed to get on top of that.
True fact, yeah.
Oh, that would have been awesome. You know what I think is a less fun arcade experience? And this one, I think we might have some pretty big disagreements on this next one.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about Total Carnage.
Let's talk about Total Carnage. What's the deal with Total Carnage?
What is the deal with Total Carnage? I don't even know. This one was developed by Midway with a port for the SNES done by Black Pearl, published by Malibu Games on the SNES at least. You know, going off the title, I didn't really know what this was going to be. Yeah, I didn't realize that this was basically like a pseudo sequel to Smash TV. This is like Smash TV. It's a top down twin stick shooter. Instead of playing as a couple of people in a dystopian game show Running Man-esque situation, you're just two big old American dudes in the Middle East mowing down a mutant army.
That's what you're doing.
Created by.
You gotta say the name. If you can say the name, or I can say the name, but one of us has to say it.
General Ak-Boob.
Yeah, General Ak-Boob has some kind of mutant army that you are just invading his country in order to wipe out before he can. I think he's got like some kind of like gene bomb or something that he's going to use to like mutate the rest of the world. So you're trying to stop that. This game is something. I'll tell you what, the Gulf War had happened. Everyone loved having a comedy version of Saddam Hussein in their game or movie or whatever. This is sort of part of that. But it's so weird and grotesque and stupid, like seemingly knowingly stupid, that I find it hard to be offended by it the way that I would be by many other things. Like, it's almost got like a trauma movie quality to it.
I think the most distasteful thing about it was, you know, like all the you know, nonsense Arabic that they had him spouting, which I...
Yeah, that's not good. That's really not good.
I just feel like this whole thing of like, oh, hey, Middle Easterners sure do have funny names. I feel like this whole...
I mean, that sucks.
Even by 1993, weren't we getting tired of this? Like, was anybody getting tired of this? Did anybody roll their eyes and say like, oh, look, it's another one of these. Could we...
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, I mean, it's like, this is a game where you're a couple of shirtless American guys. You collect American flags. You rescue... cheerleaders? Are they cheerleaders?
Yes.
You know, and like things pop up on the screen that are like the mother of all battles is about to begin before like you get locked into, you know, like a wave of enemy of you know, enemies. And it's just so far outside the realm of like anything that feels like it is sincere about any of this.
But here's my thing with this is that, you know, like Smash TV leaned into the carnival game idea a lot harder because you were on this weird dystopian game show and there wasn't really like an indication that your character was there against their will.
Yeah.
It was all very silly, almost just by association of the thing that it was cribbed from, which was the Running Man, accidental critique of capitalism, right. But like, you know, all that stuff combined, like it was fine, you know, like it was a fine, silly, you know, it was stupid fun. My problem with this game is that they doubled down on the stupid. They kind of half-assed it on the fun.
That's really interesting for you to say, because I think this game plays so much better than Smash TV. Like, I really liked playing this game. Like, I think it feels good to play. I think that, like, the level designs are really, like, so one thing that's different, I guess, about this game versus Smash TV is that Smash TV was entirely about going into a room and fighting wave after wave of enemies and then choosing another room to move on to. And this game kind of adopts that, but also includes these fairly lengthy, like, scrolling shooter sections as well, in which there are, like, little secrets or kind of bonus rooms that you can enter into for like, kind of time attack challenges. And I think all of that together really kind of livens it up for me. And I don't really feel like the bosses in this are like bullet sponges in the same way that they were in Smash TV. Like, this feels just like a really good sequel to me personally.
Okay. So I will say, like, you know, for all we just talked about how we agree on a lot of things, I very much disagree with you about the bosses not being too much of a bullet sponge. Like the boss that I kept encountering, like, I never finished it because I ran out of lives before I could get through it. And I feel like I was at that thing for like the better part of 10 freaking minutes. And I was like, how long is this fight going to take? Like, your power-ups last almost a comically short amount of time. Your default movement speed is horrendous. I think this game is pretty terrible, honestly. Like,
that's so interesting.
I don't think this game plays better than Smash TV did. And I'm like, it's been a while since I've gone back to Smash TV.
Okay.
And maybe this game would actually make me think worse of Smash TV now. I don't know, but I found this to be incredibly tedious. I wrote in my notes, like, I think it's kind of amazing that Midway took so much of, like, this, you know, dudes rock 80s action hero aesthetic and almost made a sleeping aid out of it, because if the tired jokes weren't enough to put you to sleep, like, the freaking tedious boss fights definitely would.
This is amazing. We have an actual honest-to-God disagreement about a game.
We do, well, yeah.
I don't know the last time this happened. It's kind of cool, honestly.
It is.
So, yeah, I mean, you dislike this game. I really quite like this game.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I think we just have, like, a fundamental disagreement on what the good things or bad things about this game even are. Aside from, you know, I agree, the jokes are very hacky and very tired. Yeah. I do like that at one point General Akboob says he'll buy you for $1.
Yes, yeah, that was reference to the last game.
Which is also like a second degree reference to RoboCop. So we just can't get away from RoboCop.
I mean, I will just say, like, I already think Smash TV was kind of indulging too much in the quarter munching aspect, forgetting that, you know, there are no quarters to be munched on the Super Nintendo. And I think that this game is even worse with it. Again, like, I don't understand why power-ups couldn't be permanent or at least just last a little bit longer. I don't know why the speed at which the character moves when you pick up the shoes couldn't have just been the default speed and actually make me feel like I can, you know, move around with any sort of efficiency. And I don't know why the boss fight had to be so long. I don't know why they couldn't have just made this more like a console game instead of an arcade game.
Did you like the fact that when you pick up the shoes that make you go faster, it plays like it's just a straight up Three Stooges noise?
Given that I've never liked the Three Stooges, no. I mean, okay, you know what? Like, a little bit of that is that I just really found this game incredibly tedious. Like, if this were Smash TV, I probably would have been like, oh, that's cute, you know, a little bit more. So you know, it's fine. It is fine that they did that, you know. Obviously the folks at Midway really liked just throwing in all the references they could, and you know, to some extent, like, hey, go for it, if that's your thing, go all in.
Yeah,
like, we both found the humor really not good, and I don't think the gameplay was nearly good enough to make up for it.
Okay, fair enough. So
this is going to be an interesting one to place. Did you have more to say about this one?
Not really. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward game. I think I said everything good and bad about this. And I do want to also just say that if anyone finds, like, the subject matter of this game just, like, too hard to square with, like, a fun, goofy arcade game, that's a really valid opinion. And I am in a way almost uncomfortable with my lack of discomfort with this particular game.
Yeah, I want to know, like, where were you thinking you wanted to put this before I started saying anything?
I would have put this in the B tier. I would have said this is like a high B tier game. Not an A. I don't think it's that good. But I do think that this is a game I would, you know, rather play than a number of other games on the Super Nintendo.
My thinking was that this was a D tier game, and it was not a big enough failure to be F.
Would you be willing to meet in the middle and go with C tier on this?
Yes, absolutely. I'm okay with that.
All right. Well, that puts it in the same bracket as Super Smash TV.
Yeah, yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And just like in the ending of this game, they show these two dude bro American soldier guys partying with the Smash TV guys and a bunch of hot ladies. They are together again.
Yes, we have met in the middle to come to a consensus here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can live with that. I can live with it.
Thank you, Captain Sisko.
Computer, delete that entire personal log. We've had our little robot men fights. We've experienced total carnage and total disagreement for maybe the first time on this show.
Maybe.
But now it is time to experience some Disney magic.
That's right. It's Renaissance era time, baby. So let's talk about Aladdin. Let's talk about Disney's Aladdin.
Yeah, yeah. No one else is Aladdin. Not your Aladdin.
Nope.
Not the people's Aladdin.
Uh-uh.
But Disney's Aladdin.
But Disney's Aladdin.
So Disney's Aladdin comes to us from the Walt Disney Company, of course. This particular video game comes to us from publisher, developer, Capcom. And, oh, do you hear that? That's what Capcom sounds like. Aladdin is based on the animated film from 1992. It is like... I don't know how you want to count them. The third animated theatrical release in the Disney Renaissance era.
I think that's accurate. Yeah, it's the third canonical Disney Renaissance movie after The Little Mermaid in 1989 and Beauty and the Beast, which I think did Beauty and the Beast come out in 91 or 92? I can't remember.
I think Beauty and the Beast was 91. Technically, The Rescuers Down Under was part of this, but like, come on.
Yeah, well, that's why I kind of said canonical, because I think looking back, there's like a very clear line of like what like the A talent at Disney was working on and what they were also working on in addition to that, that maybe wasn't as quite as high profile. And I mean, I don't think that necessarily means all those movies are like the best they were doing. Like, I'm one of the people that would argue that a Goofy movie is better than like half of the other Disney movies from the 90s. So, you know. But yeah, Aladdin, you know, Aladdin, I think we all do. It was a movie that went through a lot of difficulties, a lot of changes as it was being made. And it was sadly the last movie that the lyricist Howard Ashman worked on before his death. So it's a very, very like important movie in that sense. It was one of my favorites as a kid. I don't know. What did you feel about Aladdin when you were growing up?
I wasn't quite as crazy about it in the moment. I think it was just one of those like, oh, it's a cartoon. Cartoons are for little kids. Not, you know, kind of like trying to be, you know, more grown up than I actually was and not realizing that it was just causing me to miss out on stuff that was legitimately pretty darn good. You know, I have since come around on Aladdin. It is an amazing film.
Yeah, Aladdin, beloved for many reasons. People love the songs. They of course love Robin Williams' performance as the genie. The animation is gorgeous. One of the best Disney villains, I think, certainly, in Jafar. Also a movie that has a bigger footprint outside the movie than many of the other Disney movies from that time period, I think. Because there was a couple of very successful animated sequels, direct-to-video sequels, a very successful television cartoon, and video games as well. Both yep. For the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis, both had their own Aladdin video games, radically different ones. And the Genesis Aladdin game, I think is like, it ended up being like the second or third best selling game on that system.
Yeah, and I think Sega made that one themselves as well in-house.
That was, I think, to my mind, the more widely loved Aladdin game. And I think that's largely down to the animation. It had, it almost didn't look like sprite animation. It looked like the animation from the movie.
But this game's pretty gosh darn awesome too. I mean,
as a game, I am personally of the opinion that the Genesis one does not really hold up. And I've always been sort of more of a fan of the way this game plays. And I really love the way this game looks and sounds. Like, I think it's a gorgeous game.
Yeah, Capcom really did an amazing job with this one. This one was directed. Well, I don't know if I would say directed. The credit on there is planner. It was planned by Shinji Mikami. And Shinji Mikami is actually going to be the subject of today's deep dive. So Mikami was born in 1965 in the Japanese city of Iwakuni in the Yamaguchi Prefecture. He claims to have had a mostly normal childhood by the standards of the time in a 2010 interview with OneUp.com, with the exception of having a very physically abusive father. He recounted a time, for example, in which his father forced him out of the house in the middle of the night as a child to chase him in a car before making him walk back home without his shoes.
What?
Yeah.
That's not great.
He then mentions in the interview, that was pretty messed up. He'd probably go to jail for something like that. It's like, yeah, he should have been in jail. He should have been in jail. That's messed up.
Yeah, that's real messed up.
Luckily, he survived this somewhat harrowing childhood and would go on to graduate from Doshisha University and develop a fondness for arcade games. He cites 1942 and Ghosts and Goblins being early influences for him. Both Capcom games, though he didn't really have much of an awareness for the Capcom, you know, name as a brand back then. In fact, he was really just first drawn to Capcom because they were doing a job fair at a Hilton. His friend showed him a flyer for it, and he thought, free food at a Hilton? That sounds pretty cool. That was literally how he got his foot in the door. As he started talking to folks at Capcom, he started getting more interested, and he was encouraged to apply. He ended up applying for a job with Capcom and with Nintendo. Both of the interviews ended up being on the same day, and he chose Capcom, a decision that he says he was probably a good one because he doesn't think he would have gotten the job with Nintendo, which, I don't know, man, given what he's accomplished since then, maybe he's selling himself a bit short there.
Yeah, that might be underselling himself, yeah.
He would end up working on Disney titles for Capcom in the early 90s, like Aladdin. In 1996, Mikami created the game he's probably best known for, which is Resident Evil. Mikami was a fan of horror movies in his youth and drew further inspiration from Capcom's own early survival horror game for the Famicom, Sweet Home. I would say, just, you know, kind of like editorializing here, I think there's some pretty obvious connections between Sweet Home and Resident Evil, like the door opening sequences, for one thing. I think that was clearly inspired by Sweet Home. After RE1, however, Mikami was promoted to the role of producer, and he didn't really enjoy that role as he wasn't making games himself directly anymore. In the early aughts, he'd serve as the executive producer for the somewhat infamous Capcom 5 for the GameCube and directed one of those games himself, which happened to be the critical flop PN03. After this, he decided to step down to let his team create Resident Evil 4, kind of without his help, though he ended up stepping back in to assume a leadership role on Resident Evil 4 after the project sort of started getting delayed and going off the rails a bit. Eventually, Resident Evil 4 would be the one resounding success amongst the Capcom 5.
I mean, I guess, would you not say that Beautiful Joe was a success?
I mean, according to what I read, sales-wise, it was not.
Sales-wise, okay, interesting.
I mean, I would say it was a success, like...
That's an artistic success.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, but...
Like, it's a good game.
After the success of Resident Evil 4, Mikami would move to Clover Studios with many of his former Capcom colleagues. Now, I'm not entirely sure what Clover was. It almost seems like it was something of, like, a Skunkworks project by Capcom. Would you say that was probably accurate, or
kind of? I mean, it was what, so okay, it was my understanding kind of a group of developers who all felt like they had a good synergy with each other, sort of hiving themselves off from like Capcom as a whole to do their own projects. You'll talk about where that all ended up, I'm sure, but, you know.
Oh, yes,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, I think Skunkworks is not a bad way to think about it, but it is essentially, Clover was technically part of Capcom, but their games had a very particular, distinct identity of their own. Let's just say that.
Yes, certainly, because they would end up making games like Okami, which was the microphone-based pinball strategy game for GameCube.
No. Okami is the Zelda-like, the beautiful, like calligraphy art Zelda-like game.
Right.
Where you play as
what am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Odama.
Odama. Oh my God, you're right. How did I get those two things? Yeah, okay, no, Okami is, yeah, Okami was that gorgeous, like, hand-painted looking adventure game where you're playing as the dog, right?
Yep, yeah.
Okay. Oh my goodness. That was a huge brain fart on my part. I see that's why there's two of us on this show. I would have just kept going. So we get Okami, which is very good. We also get God Hand, which was kind of weird. I'm wanting to say I don't think people hated it.
It's got its fans. It was sort of notorious at the time for having gotten a, you know, just like an absolute, like brutal panning review from IGN. And at the same time being called like one of the best, like, character action games of all time by other people, like, at the same time. And like in those days, like, consensus was like an even more like kind of monstrously overpowering force in like popular games discussion than it is now.
You could almost say the games industry is worse because Metacritic existed and continues to exist.
Yeah, you could almost say that. Yeah.
Yeah. So sadly, neither of these games lived up to sales expectations, causing Capcom to pull the plug on the studio. Mikami would leave Capcom at this point to join a company called Seeds Inc. with, again, a lot of former Clover refugees. They would end up renaming the studio to Platinum. While at Platinum, he'd direct Vanquish and Bayonetta before establishing his own studio called Tango in 2010.
Yeah.
Bethesda would acquire Tango a few months after its creation.
Yeah.
At Tango, he served as the director or executive producer on games for the Evil Within series. Maybe getting back to his horror roots there. He'd also serve as producer on Hi-Fi Rush and Ghostwire Tokyo. As of 2020, Tango has been part of the Xbox Game Studios, and as of February 2023, the year we are recording this, it was announced Mikami would be leaving Tango. Most sites still have him working at Tango, so I'm not sure if he ended up leaving. He said he was going to be stepping down a few months later in February, so I don't know if that's actually happened yet. So if he's still planning to leave, I don't know what he's planning to do next. Maybe he's just going to retire, enjoy his life, which, you know, maybe. Hey. You can do that, man.
You can do that. One thing I will say, so one slight correction to what you said. He did not actually direct Bayonetta. He that was Hideki Kamiya, who has worked with him in a lot of projects, and who kind of was the sort of father of like the Devil May Cry series.
Ah, right. Okay.
Basically, there's a very clear line, from what I can tell, there's a pretty clear line you can draw from the original Resident Evil to the kind of like modified group of people who made Resident Evil 2, and then who went on to work on what was supposed to be Resident Evil 4 and turned out to be Devil May Cry, and from there to Clover. So, so that's sort of the line, and Mikami is sort of in and out of that. As it goes along.
I think like he took a more hands-on role with Resident Evil 4, like, because Resident Evil 4 went through
absolutely. But one thing as far as like what Mikami might be doing now, Kamiya also left Platinum in the last few weeks, so I don't know.
Oh,
maybe they're both gonna go off and do something new together.
Maybe they're going to finally make the arcade brawler RoboCop versus Terminator.
They would do a good job with that. Like, that's like I've mentioned before that like Clover games and eventually Platinum games had like a very particular feel. I gotta say, maybe I'm just sort of reading too much into like the kind of like auteur theory of, you know, game design. I kind of feel like there's like there's something you can trace in like how alive their games feel like in the hands, all the way back to Aladdin. I think there is something almost improvisational about the way you can move in Aladdin that really does feel like it is something I can imagine those people making, you know?
That's a perfect segue to get us right back into Aladdin. Yeah, what a delightful game this is.
It's great. It's so good.
So this is another two-dimensional side-scrolling platformer. You play as the titular Aladdin, and he's like, I feel like they nail this character. You know, he's not like this big brute who can take out guys like RoboCop, but he's very nimble. He bounces off of small platforms, people's heads as necessary.
Yeah.
He can throw things at enemies. The movement in this game is so much fun.
It's great. It may be some of the best movement controls in, like, the feel of movement in this game is you know, among the best on this system. Like, I think that, like, they've said that they were kind of inspired by Prince of Persia for this, but I think the way that you move in this game and the way that, like, the level is essentially full of movement options for you surpasses, like, the classic Prince of Persia games, for me at least.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's definitely got the number of animations that you could see where they're making that comparison, but
yeah,
you just move so much more fluidly. This is not, you know, like a stiff cinematic platformer the way that Prince of Persia was. There's just so many little touches to this game. Yeah, you know, like, you've got people in the background who are, like, looking out their windows, and when they lean forward, their head becomes a platform you can actually handspring off of.
Yep.
It is perfect. It is very much like what you think of when you think of this character, especially, you know, in the beginning moments of the movie. You know, I thought all of that was very well done. You've got Abu, the monkey. Is it Apu or Abu? They call him Abu in the game, but
it's Abu. It's Abu.
It is Abu.
The
okay.
monkey. Yeah.
I could have sworn for some reason it was Apu, but I wait a minute. That's the character from The Simpsons.
That
isn't
is
it?
The character. That is the now retired character from The Simpsons.
Folks, I'm just going to go take a nap. Apparently, I apparently just need it. Yeah, you know, Emmy, you've got this. You've got the rest of this episode.
I guess so. Yeah, he throws okay. apples. I don't know, guys. It's, yeah.
Abu is in the background. He's running around. It's very adorable. Like, you get into a boss fight and Abu is just like making little, you know, boxing sort of poses,
yep.
you know, like he's going to go after the guy. There's so much going on here that I just love. One thing I was kind of baffled by is, like, you get an item early on that lets you glide, a little parachute sheet
yeah.
kind of thing. I don't know why that wasn't just, like, default part of Aladdin's kit from the beginning, but
it's, yeah, I don't know either. It's not, strictly speaking, it's not terribly necessary to complete the game, but it is a lot. It's a lot more challenging. I've tried to do that. I've tried to play this game without using the little glide thing. And, like, you can do it. Like, the game does afford you enough, like, movement options that you could get through, like, I think probably the whole game without doing that. You couldn't necessarily get all of the, extra collectibles and things, but it's odd that that is. Yeah, I agree with you. It's odd that that's not part of his kit right from the start. But, like, yeah, it's, I don't know, like, yeah, like, as I kind of made, like, kind of a joking reference to a little bit ago, the main thing you can do in this, aside from sort of, like, jump and bounce off of and swing on things, is throw apples, which, you know, have a couple of different uses. They can take out very small enemies, and they can also stun larger enemies so that you can bounce off of them and get, like, a higher jump. And, you know, I think, like, overall, the kit is just so strong in this game. Like, it's so, you know, it gives you so many options for how you want to, like, approach the you know, the obstacles that, it's just a joy to play.
Yeah. And, like, it really does make you feel like that character in a way, you know,
yeah.
Like, Aladdin's not overpowering anybody. He's just uh-huh. really, you know, he's spry, he's clever, and, you know, he's very acrobatic. He uh-huh. can get around quick, you know, that's how he's gonna, you know, that's how he's going to vanquish his foes, is through trickery and just bouncing off of yeah. them and getting away.
Yeah.
I think, like, the look of this game is great. Like, I think they did a really great job of capturing the look of the film, you know, on the Super Nintendo. Like, this just feels like that movie. They did such a great job representing that movie. That it's kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of licensed games. We've had some where we felt like, you know, oh, hey, yeah, they really captured the feel of this. But, like, I can't think of many games that have done it better than this one.
No. No. And, I mean, we've also played other good games based on licensed properties. But, like, in a lot of cases that, like, I mean, I think about, like, Hook as an example. Hook is a very good game, but Hook is so vaguely based on the movie that it's based on that it essentially just is a good game that happens to be, you know, connected in like a vague way to this movie. This feels like it is using its, you know, sort of like source material to make something great in game form. And that's so impressive. And yeah, I just love it. I think it's a fantastic game. I think last week, you know, I was talking about Jurassic Park and how with like a little bit more time and effort, or not effort, but a little bit more time to polish things, that game could have been like a little masterpiece. I felt like this game, over the course of me playing through like basically the whole thing in like a sitting, went to me from like, oh yeah, this is a little masterpiece, too. This is just a masterpiece. This is just one of the best games on the Super Nintendo, I would say.
And going back to what you were talking about having a lot of options for how to take on certain levels, you know, I really got a sense of that, too, in a way where, like, there's these cave levels early on that you're going through. Uh-huh. And I was using the apples to take care of a lot of enemies. Yeah. And then I realized, huh, there's a lot of platforms that are like just off the top of the screen that I can't seem to get to. And then it dawned on me, oh, I wasn't supposed to kill those enemies with the apples. I was supposed to bounce off of them and get up there. Mm-hmm. You know, like you go through these levels, you know, like the first time you're probably going to go through a little bit more cautiously. You're probably going to use those apples, you know, like I did more often than you would. But you realize, oh, there's a more effective way of going through this level. It's almost a game perfectly designed to speedrun, because there are like a lot of ways you can, you know, string your movements together. You can bounce off this enemy and that'll lead you this way. You know, this is a more efficient way of getting through the level. You know, or, you know, if you're just going for like getting more power ups, catching the scarabs that fly out of the treasure chest to get a bonus stage at the end of the level, you know, whatever it is you're trying to do, whatever your goal is, if it's, you know, to try and get as many items as possible or to speed run the game, you know, you can kind of change the way you approach the game, and it feels like a completely planned and valid way of moving through it.
Exactly.
And also, those bonus levels are really cute. I love the way the genie's finger kind of bounces between the little...
Yeah, it's like a Wheel of Fortune board, basically. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, it's just kind of this weird little rubber finger, like, bobbing every time it hits another peg on the thing. It's so good.
And then the way he finger guns an extra credit or an extra life on, you know, like...
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's perfect. I was like, that is, like, the perfect way to do it. Like, yes, the genie would diegetically, within the world, give Aladdin an extra life because he's this weird, like, meta character, like Deadpool, but infinitely more charming.
Yes. Yeah. There's one particular thing that I wanted to shout out that really impressed me. So in the levels, there's a whole series of levels in this that are based on the Friend Like Me sequence from the movie, which a little odd because it does kind of feel like the genie is sort of low-key trying to kill Aladdin during those. But there are these balloons that show up there that have like the genie's face on them. And these kind of float from the bottom to the top of the screen, just kind of endlessly. And the thing that I was really struck by was the fact that these have like a handle on the bottom that is like the obvious way to interact with these, where you jump at the handle and swing off of it. eventually I realized that you can also jump onto the balloons and bounce off the top of them. And the fact that there's like these things that only really exist in one level of the game that have like two different ways of interacting with them that are both completely valid is so cool.
Yeah, those levels are great for so many reasons. Like the really wonderful MIDI version of Friend Like Me plays throughout, which I thought was good. Uh-huh. A lot of the platforms have the genie's face on them and they will change their expression.
Yeah.
Yeah, like this game is just such a delight. One thing I didn't care for was the magic carpet ride sequence where you're trying to get out of the lava cave. I had to save scum my way through that one. That felt really frustrating.
That one's really, it's like right around like the midpoint of the game and it's brutal. Like it's, you know, a fast moving auto scrolling sequence that you die if you hit anything in that basically. And it's really tough. It feels out of step with the rest of the game because of how sort of unforgiving it is. And thank God for save states for that one level in particular, because I do not, I agree that is an unfortunate thing in the game here.
And I feel like, you know, I mean, unless there was something else you wanted to talk about with this one, we could probably start talking about the list. And I guess, like, is that one bad part enough to knock this down to the B, or is this an A game?
I think this is an A game. I think I am willing to put up with the bad magic carpet level for the pleasures the rest of the game provides. I think that just for having just sort of like a really specific, really incredibly well fleshed out, way of, you know, moving in a platform game. I mean, there's just really like nothing else that feels quite like it. I love it. And I very much see this as an A tier game.
Yep. Yeah. You're not going to get any argument from me on that one. I think this can definitely go in the A tier. Delightful game. And yeah, we live in a world now where save states are a thing, and that you're probably playing this on something that that will give you access to that, so you can get through that one not great part.
Yeah, I think unless you're pulling out original hardware, because I think because you can either play this on an emulator, there is, I think, a legitimate like retail version of this you can buy that's in like a collection with the Genesis version of Aladdin. And I'm pretty sure that has the sort of like now standard rewind feature that many modern releases of the game have. So there's no shame in doing that. There's no shame in, giving yourself an edge to get past a part of a game that you're not enjoying if you're not enjoying that part. So I think that is like worth, that level is definitely worth overlooking for the sake of the rest of the game.
Fantastic game. And with that, I guess we're good to go for today. I think that's another one in the books.
I think that's going to do it for us there. The only thing left to do, I suppose, is to give a hearty congratulations to the Writers Guild of America for concluding their strike, for getting a really, really good contract out of it, and to talk about what we're going to be playing next week.
Yeah. Hopefully the writers don't have to go back on strike in the time it takes me to edit this before it goes up, because as of right now, I still haven't put up the last episode where we talked about how we very much support the
strike,
the writers and SAG-AFTRA, and then one of them already got what they wanted before I even had a chance to put the episode up. This is the problem with talking about current events.
It is a problem with talking about current events. I mainly mentioned it because we did mention the strike on the last episode, and I figured I should close the loop on it. But we are very much out of sync. So fingers crossed the contract ratification went okay and that no last-minute curveballs got thrown at them. So,
And to SAG-AFTRA, we're still on your side. Yep. Or congratulations.
Because it's very possible that your strike could also be over by the time we release this episode. So,
So for next time, we will be talking about Out to Lunch, Clay Fighter, and Ranma One Half Hard Battle.
All right. Well, please, thank you all so much for listening, and we hope you join us next time. Until then, I'm Emmy Zero.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by Technoaxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free and royalty-free at technoaxe.com. That's T-E-K-N-O-A-X-E.com.